This is The Guardian.
Today on Black Box, AI arrived in the city of Detroit, promising to revolutionize the way police fought crime. But it was a mirage.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Melissa Williams lives about 20 minutes outside of Detroit in a neighborhood called Farmington Hills.
Very suburban neighborhood, a lot of young families. Well, there's a lot of young families and there's a lot of older.
Until a couple of years ago, she had a pretty quiet life there with her husband Robert. They were childhood sweethearts.
Me and Robert met at my first job when I was 15, so we've been together a very long time and we've been married for 14 years. We have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old girls, and they take up most of our time.
Alexa, play Reed Flute.
Here's Rich Flex by Drake in 21
Seconds.
No! Alexa, stop!
Not Rich Flex.
It was a Thursday in January 2020. Robert was finishing up work, and Melissa was at home with the kids. And then she got a phone call.
And it's the police. They're calling about her husband, Robert.
They just went right into it, like very quickly, that they were looking for Robert and they needed to talk to him and that he needed to turn himself in, but wouldn't say for what.
They would not give her any details. They did not say what his supposed crime was.
This, by the way, is Guardian US's senior tech reporter, Johanna Bouyan. She's the one who first told us this story.
They just said they needed him to turn himself in. She has no idea what they're talking about.
It was just confusing. The whole thing was confusing. I said, why don't you call him yourself? He's at work. And I gave them his phone number. And then we hung up.
And she immediately calls her husband, Robert, who is at work.
So when she calls me, I'm like, what are you talking about?
He's just as confused.
And she like, no, be serious.
I said, I don't know what's going on, but I just got a really weird phone call.
And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
While Melissa was calling Robert, in the middle of the call, Robert started getting a call from a number that he didn't recognize.
Click over to talk to them, and they told me the same thing. And I'm like, so where are you calling from? So he said the third precinct. And I'm like, that would mean that the crime would have had to happen in that area. And so I'm like, well, I'm never in that area, so you got the wrong person.
Robert hangs up, tries to get on with his day, and drives home to Farmington Hills. But when he turns into his street,
there's a police car parked outside of his house. And when he pulls into his driveway, they pull up behind him and block his car in.
First degree. Go ahead and put your hands behind your back. I'm not going to drive all the way here from Detroit over
here. No. We're the police.
We got the police body camera footage from that day.
Let's not make a show in front of your wife and kids because you are under arrest for your warrant, for your outstanding
warrant. Can I see the warrant?
It's a suburban street. The sun's going down. There's snow on the ground. Bare trees. Robert's standing beside his four-wheel drive, looking tense, but holding it together. His wife, Melissa, comes out. And she goes straight to his side.
It didn't feel real. They didn't introduce themselves. Like, they didn't show their badge or anything. It just felt like, are these even real police officers? I don't know.
They kept saying they can't tell me. They can't tell me what I was being arrested for. He's like, well, when you put the handcuffs on, I'll show you the warrant.
I have it in my hand. I'll show you when you get in the car, okay?
And we're having like a discussion, but Lissa is like, hey, you need to stop because if they're the police, you know, this is 2020. It's a dangerous time to be resisting.
Let's be civil about it. Let's not make
okay,
a show.
So I don't get to go in my house.
No.
No.
Just go home. Settle down, bro.
His oldest daughter, Julia, comes outside.
Hey, Juju B.
Robert Williams and Melissa Williams call her Juju. She's stepping around the snow.
Wear your jacket.
She doesn't have any shoes on or a jacket.
Why are you looking at... They made a mistake, baby. It's okay. I'll be back in a minute.
She was still five. I said, Juju, go back in the house. I'll be back in a minute.
You go back there,
I got know. In the car.
I'm going to move back a little bit, okay?
Be careful. One in custody. Do it off of that.
The officers who arrested Robert Williams that day were acting on a tip, but not from a witness, nor from an informant. In fact, not from a person at all. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. This is Black Box, Episode 5, The White Mask.
And if you didn't have the camera, do you think you would have known the truth?
No. Absolutely not.
And we aren't just talking about cameras.
The technology goes a lot further than that. Someone is always watching.
Surveillance on steroids.
Because these days your face is no longer just your face. It's a data set that machines can use to ID you. And often you won't even have a clue.
That day in January, more than 4 years ago, Robert's ordinary family life was upended. He found himself in the back of a squad car and then being processed at the Detroit Detention Center.
Yeah, it's a dirty building. They have you get up and you go get patted down.
All of his valuables are taken off of him.
Watch, cell phone, wallet.
He gets his fingerprints taken. They're not really explaining how or why they're taking any of this information, what they're going to do with it.
By this point, Robert had seen the warrant. It said that he was under arrest for felony larceny, stealing. But what he had supposedly stolen and when, nobody would tell him.
So I see a court-appointed attorney and I tell him, I don't even know why I'm here. And he's like, really? Like, he didn't know what happened. And I'm still trying to figure out, well, why am I locked up for it then?
That's when he first learned something about the actual crime he's being accused of. Another detainee in the same cell overhears some officers saying Robert's been arrested for stealing watches.
And I'm like, nah, couldn't have been. I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me because why would I steal a watch?
You know, he's left in the dark. Both literally and figuratively.
The next morning, Robert was still in custody, and his wife Melissa was at home with the kids, just trying to make things seem as normal as possible.
I just got up and I had to take Julia to school and had to go to work. Julia lost her first tooth that next morning. Just tried to make it regular. I didn't know. Like, I was hoping that the fact that she lost a tooth would overshadow the fact that her dad went to jail the night before, and like that would be her story of the day at school, and not because we didn't know what to say to anybody because we didn't know what was happening still.
Eventually, Robert was taken from his cell for questioning. We asked the Detroit Police Department for an interview for this podcast, but they declined. So here's Robert's version of events. Two detectives sit him down. He asks them to explain what exactly he's done wrong. What's he being accused of stealing? And the detectives say, we'll tell you if you sign this form waiving your right to an attorney, which Robert does. And then they start asking him about this watch store, Shinola. He tries to picture the store and remembers he's been there, but like 6 years ago. He can remember specifically when he was there because Julia had just been born. It was the summertime, and he was pushing her in a stroller.
And Shinola, I think, had just opened up, and my brother-in-law thought that Shinola was the most coolest store in the world. And I'm like, okay, let's see about that. And then we went in there, and I was not impressed. And I didn't want to watch from there, and I was like, it's all right.
Then, Robert says, the detectives pull out a CCTV screenshot from the day the store was robbed. Johanna's seen the footage.
The man is in the corner of the store. He's wearing a red hat and a black leather jacket. He starts grabbing watches off the shelf. There's no employees around him, and he's shoving them into his pockets.
This is not a master criminal. The man looks nervous. He keeps looking over his shoulder, freezing, like he expects the staff to come around the corner any second.
And then he leaves the store with thousands of dollars of goods in his pockets. The police show up to the store and they really don't have a lot of evidence about who stole all of those watches. There was no one who really saw the person who did it. There were no fingerprints. You can really only make out that he was a black man, that he was wearing a St. Louis Cardinals hat. And that's pretty much it.
So when the police take out this CCTV still and show it to Robert,
as soon as they pull it out, you know, it really does not look like Robert at all.
Yeah, they showed me that and I had to tell the guy, that's not me.
Robert also says, you know, I hope you don't think all black men look alike.
Right, and then he had to look at it again and say, hold on, let me talk to my partner. And they conferred and said that they agreed that I wasn't the person they was looking for.
It's towards the end of their questioning when the detectives say something that gives Robert this little glint of a clue as to why all of this is happening.
In that conversation, they mention something along the lines of, oh, well, the computer must not have gotten it right.
Yeah, he told me that. He said, so I guess the computer got it wrong. And I'm like, what?
He was detained for a total of 30 hours.
And after that, he's released.
Because they couldn't keep me any longer.
Then the realization hit that he was out, but it wasn't over. It wasn't just like a, sorry. It was a, no, you now you need to get a lawyer because you have to appear and you still have to defend yourself against this mistake.
Even though two detectives had appeared to acknowledge this was all based on a mistake, they didn't do anything to stop the process that was now in motion. Robert was on bail, facing charges that carried a maximum 5-year prison sentence. He was due back in court in 2 weeks. And in the car, driving home from the detention centre, he and Melissa started trying to make sense of what the hell had just happened.
Robert was recounting to his wife everything that he had went through and told her that in his interview with the detectives, they mentioned something about a computer not getting it right.
And it was basically Lissa's analytical part of her makeup that kind of figured it out because...
At that point, Robert hadn't heard much about facial recognition technology, but Melissa had.
At the time, I had just known that it was something new that Detroit was doing and that...
And she was the one who started suspecting that the police had used facial recognition technology to determine who burglarized the Shinola store.
I started reading more articles from the ACLU and others that mentioned facial recognition and the flaws that it has. And we reached out to some local attorneys and I was like, I'm going to try the ACLU. I don't know if they'll get back to me, but they did.
They realized that this was much bigger than just trying to prove that Robert didn't do it. There was technology involved that they might need some help and support in defending against.
Facial recognition technology, the kind that Melissa and Robert now suspected might be behind his arrest, is a type of AI system powered by neural networks. Feed one of these networks enough images of human faces, and eventually it starts to know what it's looking at. A mouth, or a nose, or an eye. Give it some more, and it can begin to distinguish between different faces. The unique curve of someone's mouth, the shape of their nose, the colour of their eyes. The Dream, with enough training, is a system that you can show a picture of someone's face, anyone's face, and have it tell you with perfect accuracy the specific person it's looking at. At least, that's The Dream. And it was a seductive one for police departments across America, including in Detroit. where around July of 2017, the police department signed a contract with an AI company. The police also built a database of everybody in Michigan's driver's licenses, without their explicit permission, by the way. They could upload the faces of anybody they suspected of a crime, and the AI would compare it to this database and return a list of names. The hope was that it would make Detroit safer. But there was a problem.
I've been seeing the problem for some time, actually, in my book, Unmasking AI.
One that had first become apparent to a researcher called Dr. Joy Bwalamwini, back when she was a computer science student, trying to teach a simple AI robot named Simon to play a game.
Peekaboo, so cover your face, uncover your face, that kind of thing. And my robot.
The point was just to get Simon to recognize when it was looking at a human face. And the robot had no trouble recognizing the face of her white classmates. But when Joy went peekaboo and dropped her hands.
And my robot did not detect my face. And so that's when I started to have a notion that, okay, there might be something going on here.
A couple of years later, Joy was at MIT doing her master's and playing around with a different facial recognition system. And once again, this thing just couldn't make her out. It was like she was invisible. And she realized she was carrying something in her bag that might be useful.
I actually had a white mask with me since it was Halloween time in the United States. And I put on that white mask. That white mask was detected before my actual dark skin face was detected. And so it was that experience that pushed me to really start looking into these types of technologies a little bit more.
This phenomenon became Joy's master's thesis. She took four of the biggest facial recognition systems and tried to figure out, were they biased? She showed them more than 1,000 different faces and asked, is this a man or a woman? And looked at where they made mistakes. And she discovered, if you show them a picture of a white man, they got it right nearly every time. When you showed them a picture of a woman or a black man, they started making a pretty shocking number of mistakes. And there was this one group that the systems were absolutely terrible at identifying. Black women. The best performing system was 32 times more likely to make a mistake with a black woman than a white man.
The National Institute for Standards and Technology, after my research came out, they did a more comprehensive study looking at facial recognition, and they found that in some cases, systems were 10 to 100 times worse when it came to recognizing the faces of individuals who were Black or Asian as compared to Caucasian faces. AI systems are not neutral. Yes, they can have gender bias. Yes, they can have racial bias. There's even colorism, skin type bias, right, baked into AI systems.
The reason for this is not because AI is biased, but the data that we use to train it is. Those data sets, the millions of pictures that you feed into an AI system to teach it to recognize faces, they're assembled by people making choices. And that's where the bias creeps in.
What happens is these training data sets generally don't reflect the real world. And so you might have what I call pale male data sets that are 80% male, maybe 70% lighter skinned individuals. And so it's not so surprising that these highly biased training data sets, when they're used, actually then result in systems that work best for the types of faces they were exposed to.
According to Dr. Joy, there was a lot of skepticism when her research was published.
Oh, the initial response was a combination of bemusement and eye rolls. Like, are you serious? You're telling me the algorithm is racist now? You tell me math is sexist? So I had those types.
Joy formed an organization, the Algorithmic Justice League, specifically to raise the alarm. A few other researchers around the country were doing the same. But as they were warning about these kinds of systems, police departments were embracing them. And to Joy's horror, starting to use them to investigate crimes.
I continued to see problem after problem, and the stakes were higher and higher. So even when I gave my TED Talk, I think that was back in 2016, I predicted and warned we were going to get false arrest. Police departments can currently look at these networks unregulated using algorithms that have not been audited for accuracy. But misidentifying a suspected criminal is no laughing matter, nor is breaching civil liberties. It was predictable and preventable.
Predictable and preventable. So then, how did Robert Williams end up in a jail cell?
So I spoke to Robert's lawyer at the ACLU, Philip Mayer.
We knew that the city had taken a photo still from surveillance footage at the Shinola store.
Very grainy, really hard to make out, and poor quality.
So this photo that was used for facial recognition is one that really anybody with common sense should have known not to use for facial recognition.
And yet, it was. The police ran the picture through their facial recognition system. It came back with hundreds of possible matches for the man in the Shinola store. And one of them was a guy who hadn't been anywhere near that store in 6 years. Was this the only evidence that police were relying on when they arrested Robert that day in his front drive?
For the most part, yes.
The only other evidence, so-called, and we're in an oral medium, so you can't see me putting scare quotes around evidence, is that the detective took the photo, put it in a lineup with five other photos, and showed it to a security official associated with the Shinola store.
Who actually was not present at the time of the burglary.
The only thing she had done was watch the same surveillance footage that from which the still was taken.
And so it wasn't, you know, an eyewitness interview where someone had seen the person who was committing the crime and then was able to then try to match that person to an image. It was a person was looking at the two separate images that the police had come up with and said, yes, I think those two people look alike.
The Robert Williams case was the first example to come to light of someone being wrongfully arrested in America because of AI. And you might not be surprised to learn, it wasn't the last.
And I'm Glenda Lewis. Tonight you'll hear the story of one man who was wrongfully arrested due in part to that technology.
Michael Oliver was being investigated by the same detective, was similarly arrested based on nothing other than a facial recognition match followed by a photographic lineup.
I'm asking him, like, how was my face even brought up? And that's when he told me, like, your face, they put you in a lineup. The face recognition said it was you.
The exact same sort of defective procedure that was done in Mr. Williams' case.
It happened again.
It wasn't any evidence. It was just a picture. A computer said we look alike.
And again.
Facial recognition technology was the only source linking him to the crime.
And again.
Hennepin County claimed his arrest was the result of faulty facial recognition software and not human error.
Since Robert Williams, there have been six other cases that we know about. All but one of them have involved people who are black. One of the most recent was the frankly mind-blowing case of Portia Woodruff.
Who was 8 months pregnant at the time, was arrested and accused of carjacking.
Based on precisely the type of shoddy use of facial recognition that we saw in Mr. Williams' case.
There was just no clear evidence tying her to that crime, but she was accused of carjacking.
Six officers showed up at her home when she was getting her little daughters ready for school.
She appeared at the door, you know, fully 8 months pregnant.
There was a female police officer at the door. She asked who if I was Portia Woodruff. I confirmed. I said yes. She says, I have a warrant for your arrest.
And the police still said that you're under arrest for carjacking.
In the midst of the conversation, you know, I opened up my door a little bit wider so she could see, so that they could see, you know, I was 8 months pregnant. And I also pointed to my cars that were in the driveway at the time. You know, I'm like, I'm 8 months pregnant and, you know, I have a car right there. Why would I carjack anyone?
And her reaction, according to court documents, was, you know, what any other 8 month pregnant woman's reaction would be, which is like, are you kidding? I am like, look at me. Like, what car am I jacking at this point?
So I was experiencing, you know, anxiety. I was having panic attacks. I was just trying to pretty much hold myself together because I didn't understand what was going on.
I mean, it is truly a wild case. I am also 8 months pregnant. So I can't even walk up the stairs at this point. And for someone to accuse a woman of carjacking at this stage of her pregnancy is truly baffling to me.
Coming up, Robert Williams was arrested for a crime he didn't commit. But was he one of the lucky ones?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Portia Woodruff's case was dismissed a month later because of insufficient evidence. The police chief blamed her arrest on poor police work and not on their facial recognition system. So, despite that and other high-profile mistakes, that software is still being used by the police department in Detroit and in lots of other cities across America. And a pretty urgent question to ask is, are those systems in use right now biased? And we tried to do that.
For law enforcement, correctly and quickly identifying a person is critical, whether in an arrest situation, on the scene of a car...
The company that sold the software used in Robert's case and in some of the other wrongful arrests is called DataWorks Plus.
Identifying a person quickly can help to keep officers safe in a potentially dangerous situation.
There's not a huge amount of information out there about them, so we tried to call their representative in Detroit directly to find out more.
Sorry, I'm not here to take your call, but if you leave your name, number, and a brief message, I'll get back to you just as soon as possible. Thanks for calling, and have a great day.
But he never called us back. Eventually, though, we got through to the person at the DataWorks headquarters who deals with media inquiries.
This is Lisa.
Hey, Lisa, this is Michael Safi. I'm a journalist with The Guardian. How's it going?
Fine, Michael. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks.
We had a long list of questions. What data set are these neural networks trained on? Have you tried to audit it to figure out if it's biased? What do those audits show? How good is it at telling black people apart?
It was used in some cases in Michigan.
I'm sorry, I can't comment on that. Thank you for calling.
No, that's okay. Is there somebody who you could direct me to who could... No, she's hung up.
We didn't get an answer. And legally, they don't have to give us one. Johanna said some facial recognition software providers do volunteer to have their data scrutinized.
Often it's, you know, these companies will say that they have done some sort of self-audit or hired a company themselves that have audited their system and said that we meet these standards that some organizations have set.
But there's no way of checking out how robust any of that is. And despite the incredibly high stakes of all of this, there are no federal laws regulating it.
So there's really not a great way at the moment to make sure that these companies are doing what they say and are operating effectively, and we don't have federal regulation that mandates that at this point.
In response to criticism, facial recognition providers usually say, look, our systems aren't perfect. They're not meant to be the final word. They're just a clue, an investigative lead, so be careful how you use them. But those nuances aren't built into the way Detroit police officers are trained on how to use these systems. Because, according to the ACLU, in Detroit, police officers aren't trained on how to use these systems at all.
We learned in our discovery process, no detective at the Detroit Police Department has ever been trained on how to use facial recognition. Their training regime consists of learn on the job at the expense of citizens who are falsely arrested.
Again, we put this to the Detroit Police Department and didn't get a response. But after the Portia Woodruff case, the third wrongful arrest in Detroit, the department did make changes to the way they use facial recognition.
Yes, to some degree, many of these cases have led to various reforms that the Detroit police have introduced.
Detroit police, in response to public pressure, amended their facial recognition policies to say we will now only use facial recognition when investigating certain violent crimes.
But that, for many people, is not helpful, and in fact is actually much more dangerous.
It's more dangerous now because the software is only being used in cases where a mistake is much more costly. Investigating violent crimes with longer maximum sentences, where getting it wrong might mean an innocent person going to prison for decades.
So changing the crimes that they were using facial recognition for is not something that the people who have been harmed by this technology feel is enough or sufficient. One thing that Robert Williams said in our interview is that he and his wife were lucky.
What if I wasn't arrested for stealing watches? What if I was arrested for murder or carjacking or something like that?
If the crime was much more severe, they believe that Robert would not have been released when he was and would have remained detained based on this false facial recognition match because the stakes were so much higher.
And Johanna, is it possible that there are cases like Robert Williams's that don't have his ending, where people are not released but in fact convicted and are now serving long prison sentences because of evidence based on biased AI?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's not just a possibility. There is, you know, many people believe there's a high likelihood that there are many others who have been arrested because of a false facial recognition match. And they expect this to continue to happen until there's real overhauls of regulation around facial recognition. Some people are advocating for an all-out ban.
Joy told us AI is improving really fast, and one day, maybe soon, we may be able to create facial recognition systems that aren't biased, that recognize every face they see perfectly, whatever their gender or race. But if that happens, she said, that wouldn't be the end of our problems. In fact, it might be that the only thing worse than a facial recognition system that doesn't work is a system that does.
Accurate systems can be abused. And so now what does it look like to have surveillance tools authoritarian governments would have dreamed of, right? So I can track where you go to school, where you go to worship, where you go to date, you know, what hospitals you might be going to, what clinics you might be going to. And so a world with perfect facial recognition is a world with very powerful surveillance tools. And so I keep in mind that facial recognition technologies are dangerous both when they are faulty, but they're also very dangerous when they're accurate.
Robert Williams is today a free man. When he went back to court, he and his attorney were able to clear his name. He's launched a lawsuit against the city and become a campaigner against the misuse of facial recognition software.
I think they need to hold off on using it until they figure out how it should be used. Or if they're not going to stop using it, you have to at least regulate it to a point where you say, okay, we're only going to use it in this way, and we're going to use it based on these things.
But his arrest hasn't left the family untouched. This whole ordeal, It didn't just happen to him.
So Julia was 5 and Rosie was 2. While he was actually being cuffed and arrested, Julia had come outside. I was holding Rosie at one point. You know, we came back inside as they pulled off, and you know, Julia burst into tears. Rosie started crying because Julia was crying, and we were just, I mean, you could feel the fear and like the confusion. And so to a 5-year-old, you have to explain that the police that you've taught your kids to trust, like that they got it wrong. And then, I don't know, it was just a hard thing. It's honestly still a hard thing.
Like Lizzo said, Juju lost a tooth the next day. So, do you have any other children? No? Okay, so this being your first child, you'll see. So, right? Imagine not being able to be there when they lose their first tooth. Right? When I came home the next night, Julia looked at me and told me that I lied to her because I said I'd be right back.
Artificial intelligence can do incredible things and make terrible mistakes. And as the power of these systems grows, those mistakes also get bigger. One day, maybe in the near future, AI might become super intelligent. And if it does, those mistakes could be apocalyptic. And that is where we're going next.
The difficulty is that people don't realize they're about to die. If people knew that, we could just stop.
Neither DataWorks Plus nor the Detroit Police Department responded to the detailed written questions we put to them. Thanks to Dr. Joy Buolamwini. Her new book is called Unmasking AI, My Mission to Protect What is Human in a World of Machines. Black Box is produced by Alex Atak. The executive producer is Josh Kelly. The commissioning editor is Nicole Jackson. This episode was reported by Johanna Buyan. Additional production support in Detroit by Noor Al-Samarai. Original music and sound design by Rudy Zagadlo. The music supervisor is Max Sanderson. The next episode of Black Box is out Thursday.
This is The Guardian.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.